Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. Happy Monday to you. Hope that you had a very nice weekend. And 80,000 people showing up for the moral, whatever it was, on Saturday. I don't think, folks, there were actually 80,000 people there. And yet, the media, willing accomplices with spreading inaccuracies, and we've come to, you know, be accustomed to that. It's nothing new, but really 80,000. So they did have their nice march, their nice gathering, whatever it was, and we'll just move on from there. We're so glad to have you listening to What Matters in North Carolina. I guess it's a good thing the General Assembly was not in session while they were there. 80,000 people trying to cram into the legislative building would have been a bit much. But anyway, where do they get these numbers? I mean, really, 80,000? I mean, what percentage of the population of Wake County is that? Are there a million people in Wake County? So almost 10%? Of the whole county showed up? I don't think so. But anyway, it's really not important, except that it highlights, you know, once again, in glaring fashion, the misinformation that the media loves to spread when it comes to things that are done by those on the left. And I will tell you this, had there actually been a pro-life event that really had 80,000 people, then you would have had something like this as a headline: hundreds gather Halifax Mall. I mean, I don't get this. Do the people that own, like McClatchy, the News and Observer folks, Charlotte Observer, do they just not care what their reporters are reporting? Do the folks at the television stations in our market just not care? Or are they willing accomplices? Are they encouraging the misinformation that we get from the people that work at the various television stations? I don't know. It's very likely that, yes, they are encouraging that, because I can tell you this. If I got on this microphone and began to just blabber things that were not true, things that were not accurate, I don't believe that the people that employ me would be very happy about that. And so, you know, I feel very much that it is incumbent upon me to tell the truth. I think the truth is a pretty good place to, you know, to drop anchor. And yet the media in our market and across our state often, more often than not, misrepresent, misinterpret, misinform, and it's just frustrating. It is very frustrating. In fact, we're going to have a fabulous interview today on What Matters in North Carolina with Representative William Brawley, and he's going to talk a little bit about that. And an example that he's going to use is going to be in the area of education. If you take out copies of the North Carolina state budget since 2011, and look at the bottom line for K-12, the numbers go up. Now, I understand there's a lot of folks on the left that, you know, they're into this Common Core thing, and maybe the math is just a little different. But, for example, if in 2010 there's, say, $100 being spent for education, and in 2011, there's $150. That's an increase. Now, I had to simplify that there. But the fact of the matter is, the numbers go up. The numbers go up. And yet we often hear how the General Assembly, those mean old Republicans, are destroying education in North Carolina. Just not funding it. There's just no money. It's a wonder, folks, that any of the schools in our state are open. It's a wonder that there is a single teacher teaching in North Carolina, because the Republican majority in the General Assembly is not funding education. And it's just ridiculous. And so instead of having headlines that speak the truth and talk about teacher raises that there have been several of and increased funding in education, we get headlines and news stories that maybe they don't just out and out lie, but they lend credence to the lie that there has been a decrease in education funding. And so I don't get it. You know, I guess if you go to journalism school and you want to work for a media outlet, the typical media outlet, then one of the things that you have to learn and do well at is that the truth is not important. And it's sad because, you know, we have freedom of the press in this country, and a lot of people have taken that to mean freedom to lie or distort. And so anyway, I rant a little bit on a Monday, and it's just amazing. But what is equally amazing and even more so is a conversation that we're going to have with Representative William Brawley. And I'll tell you, folks, that I have talked with him in the past, but not as in-depth of a conversation as we are going to have today. And you are going to enjoy this. I promise you. He is a very thoughtful, very articulate member of the North Carolina House of Representatives. He is on the House Appropriations Committee. He is the senior chairman on the House Finance Committee. So he knows his stuff when it comes to budgeting and, you know, appropriations and what has actually been going on in our state. So stay tuned. And this is a good one. You're going to enjoy Representative William Brawley here on What Matters in North Carolina. It's always a pleasure here on What Matters in North Carolina to speak with our elected officials, particularly from the North Carolina House of Representatives. And joining us now is Representative William Brawley. He represents the fine folks down in Mecklenburg County, District 103. Representative Brawley, welcome to the show, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Shriver. I appreciate your courtesy today. And I frequently will describe my district as Matthews and Mint Hill, the part of Mecklenburg County that is still in North Carolina. And as you've probably seen from some of the news, sometimes we wonder about other parts of Mecklenburg County.
Well, it's certainly never a dull moment down there, that's for sure. And I wanted to start, for the folks that are not familiar with yourself, how long have you been in the General Assembly and that sort of thing? Give us a little background.
6 years. I ran in 2010 to replace Jim Gully, who was retiring. It was an open seat, and it was a very contested election. The district had been drawn with a slight Democratic advantage. Jim Gully had been a hunting buddy of Jim Black's.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I think the Democrats didn't challenge him in 2008, but when he retired in 2010, they made a very strong push for the seat. I was able to win that race reasonably well, but it was a real battle. It turned out that was also the year that the Republicans took control of the General Assembly for the first time in over 100 years.
Well, certainly that was a significant landmark election, and I wanted to ask you about that, Representative Brawley. When the Republicans, it was announced the day after the election, and the Republicans had, gained the majority in both the House and the Senate for the first time in decades. Certainly there was a lot of joy and, ecstasy, so to speak, on the part of the Republican Party statewide. But when you came to Raleigh, you found a huge mess in the state budget and the unemployment and in Medicaid and in the state health plan. So was your initial joy over gaining the majority kind of tempered by, look what the Democrats have left behind?
Well, it did turn out to be a lot worse than we thought when we ran. Having said that, we were glad we got there in time to keep it from getting still worse. When I ran, we were anticipating a budget shortfall of $2.5 billion. There were $1.5 billion of temporary taxes that would expire, And I had campaigned saying that we would not continue the temporary taxes, nor would we increase taxes, but we would cut spending. Of course, the debate would always be, okay, what are you going to cut? And the answer was, that's the wrong question. The question is, what are you going to fund?
Mm-hmm.
We needed to do education. We needed to do public safety. We needed to do roads. There were things that were the necessary and proper functions of state government. And we would prioritize all of the functions in order. We would take the revenue that we had and would fund until we ran out of money. And when we ran out of money, everything below the line was cut. And that's kind of the way you have to do it at home. And we felt like fiscal responsibility in Raleigh would make good sense. And as a freshman, I had run on that, but all of the leadership espoused the same goals. We had campaigned on a common message, and we believed it. And we went to Raleigh and set about keeping our promises. You were correct on unemployment. There was discussion of how to pay $2.7 billion in borrowed money from the federal government that had been used to pay unemployment. During the discussion of how to pay it out and when to make the decision, I asked the question that apparently nobody had bothered to ask. What was the interest rate? 4.086%. And I did some quick calculations, and we were paying $2,100,000 a week in interest.
Oh, my goodness.
So while we were arguing over whether to make a decision on that particular day or delay it for a week, it was going to cost us over $2 million to wait a week. And that changed the whole tenor of the debate, and it was just an innocent question by a freshman who just said, well, what's the carry cost on this? But when you realize that you're spending over $100 million a year in interest on borrowed money for a transfer payment that's already made, it just doesn't make good sense.
No.
You need to pay that bill off. We started going at just taking that kind of attitude towards everything. People were drawing unemployment for 99 weeks at over $500 a week. That made them eligible for food assistance. And basically, you had the equivalent of a $37,000 annual income if you were on max unemployment. You got that for 2 years.
Hmm.
A lot of people stay home and watch television for that.
When
we reduced the term, it was amazing how many people were able to find a job. And unemployment dropped significantly. We did a lot of regulatory reform, and we set about cutting taxes and creating an environment for businesses to hire more people to expand. And our economic growth in North Carolina has led the nation over the last 6 years. We've had the largest percentage of growth in our domestic product of any state in the union. Another thing that was fun to watch, there's a group, Arthur Laffler, an economics group that publishes a book called Rich States, Poor States. It ranks, among other things, the tax climate for business in every state. The year I started in the General Assembly, we were 24. The current year, which will end, or the current rating cycle, which ends every year on April 15th, we are number two in the nation behind only Utah. And several people think that with our additional decrease in corporate rate and the additional decrease in the personal rate, that we will become the number one tax climate in the country, overtaking Utah.
Wow.
And to do that in 6 years, it's a lot of hard work.
Absolutely.
Having said that, we've cut taxes, we've cut regulations, and revenues have grown every year. Because we're getting out of people's way and let them actually make money, hire people, keep a lot of it. We don't try to take it all. When you get to keep some of the money you earn, you tend to want to earn more. So we believe we've had good success on that. At the same time, we have increased educational funding every year. We don't get credit for it, but we have. We've had three teacher pay raises and bonuses. We don't get a lot of credit for that, but we have, and we will increase teacher funding again this year because we promised last year we wouldn't. So far, we've kept our promises.
Our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina is Representative William Brawley. He is representing folks down in Mecklenburg County. And I'm looking at the General Assembly website, and Representative Brawley, you chair the senior chairman of the House Finance Committee, and you're vice chair on appropriations. So really, from a practical standpoint, you're right there in the thick of things when it comes to what you just talked about. You know firsthand these financial challenges that the state faced when the Republicans gained the majority in the General Assembly. And just for our listeners that may not quite understand, because it doesn't make any sense to the average person, and really to me sometimes, and I went to school in South Carolina, so I'm not that smart, but you would think that when you come to town and the budget is facing a $3 billion deficit, that the initial reaction would be, well, we've got to raise taxes. But you guys didn't do that at all. And not only were you able to balance the budget quickly, but we're seeing reports now of a $500 million surplus in revenue. How does that work when you cut taxes and yet revenue goes up? Doesn't make any sense.
Actually, it makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
Think about it for a minute. If you drive real fast on the highway, we stop and give you a ticket and you pay a fine. Why? So you'll slow down.
Okay.
If you want people to smoke less, you raise the tax on cigarettes so people will stop smoking because they can't afford it. You do the same thing with high taxes on liquor. There's several things that you discourage by fiscal policies, fiscal penalties. So we've got a situation where people create wealth in our society. So why would we tax them? Why would we punish them for creating more wealth? If they pay taxes, we've got money to spend on whatever government programs we want. But if we take more money than we need to provide the necessary functions of government, that money is not available to open a new office, to hire one or two additional employees. One of the examples, you know, you hear a lot of talk about the problems with Dodd-Frank. It discourages loans. It makes it hard for banks to operate.
Right.
On one of the national news shows, they talked about Fifth Third Bank, which is a small bank here, well, relatively small bank. They have a lot of branches in North Carolina. 4 years ago, their reports to the federal government ran 3,000 pages. For the current year, their reports under Dodd-Frank ran 19,000 pages. How many people spent a 40-hour week writing those 19,000 pages when those same people could be out encouraging business growth or put to work in a productive environment that creates new wealth? What would you rather have, a business expand or create a 19,000-page document that nobody's going to read?
Hmm.
To me, it just makes sense.
Yeah.
Encourage people to grow businesses, hire employees. And that's really the thing about fiscal policy and government. We can't create jobs. We can make it easier or harder for business to create jobs. That's where the jobs come from.
Representative Brawley, we're hearing about, as I mentioned, this, and thank you for that explanation, by the way. It does make perfect sense. The state is looking at a projected $500 million revenue surplus. This will be, I think, the second year in a row that the state is forecasting surpluses in revenue. And some folks are saying, hey, guys, it's taxpayers' money. Let's give it back. And we know that Governor Cooper is going to be rolling out his budget soon. And then the Senate, I think, will go first this year. Is it really practical, even though it sounds nice? I think if you multiply or divide the number of people in the state by the amount of surplus, it really wouldn't come to that much of a refund to folks. But what is your response when you hear that, you know, give the money back?
It's a good sentiment, and I agree with it to the extent that we are constantly cutting the tax rate and trying to get the portion of the economy that we take down.
Mm-hmm.
To some extent, this particular surplus is like the situation where you have over forecast, you're withholding so that you get a big refund from the on your income tax. You could spend it, or you can save it, and then you have additional money. We tend to try to put the surpluses in a savings account, which is really for savings. If there's a bad economic downturn and tax receipts go down, we would have money in the bank to pay the bills. The state requires municipalities to have an 8% reserve, while the state does not have an 8% reserve. And we're trying to get to that.
Okay.
Because that way, you know, you've got a cushion if something goes wrong. If the forecast is off, if there's some major disaster like the hurricanes, we're able to do hurricane relief and fire relief out of cash on hand in the rainy day fund, specifically because we didn't spend it until we had a real rainy day. As far as the budget that's coming, I think this will be very contentious.
Do you really?
Yes, I do. I think Governor Cooper is going to come out with a budget that's going to make a lot of promises that he knows he won't have to keep. I would suspect that there will be huge raises for teachers, and the General Assembly will raise teacher pay, but not as much as the governor would have raised. And then he'll say, see, I would have given you more. These guys gave you less. Go beat them up. And we're seeing a lot of that. Things are getting very contentious in the state. And I find it disappointing because government needs to be bipartisan. Governing. Fiorello H. LaGuardia once said, there's not a Republican way to pick up the garbage. And that's how he was able to be a Republican governor, or excuse me, a Republican mayor in New York City during the New Deal when Democrats basically ruled America.
Uh-huh.
Because he understood the job of his government was to pick up the garbage and make sure the police worked. For us, I use the idea of potholes. If you hear us arguing over potholes, we're not governing. When we are patching the roads, you don't even know there's a pothole because it's smooth. You don't have the bump. You don't have the noise. When you're hearing all the noise, that means people aren't governing. They're participating in partisan politics. In 2013, the General Assembly passed, under the leadership of then-Governor Pat McCrory, a thing called the Strategic Transportation Investments Law. What we began to do was prioritize roads based on objective data and put the money where the need was greatest so people built the roads they need. Prior to that, everything was done with politics. You had to have 61 votes in the House and 26 votes in the Senate to get a road built. And invariably, a powerful politician got their name put on it. What makes more sense to you? Building the roads we need or the roads of the people that are politically most powerful? When we're building the roads we need, there's not a lot of argument. There's not a lot of debate. You're not hearing the screaming that you used to. Anytime you hear us fighting over an issue in Raleigh, everybody calling everyone else, that's politics. That's not government. We need to go ahead and patch those potholes. We need to pay the bills. We need to fund our pensions and keep the promises we've made to our employees. When we get this thing running smoothly, and in every case where we have gotten a part of government to run smoothly, there's not a lot of noise. It just purrs like a well-tuned engine.
Yeah.
Kind of boring, and that's good.
Well, you know, I appreciate your candor because I think I have been one of the few people, at least in the conservative side of the media, that has been speculating that Governor Cooper will come out with a budget and I just make up some numbers. For example, he could have a 10 to 15% teacher and state employee pay raise in his budget. Well, of course, being prudent, the conservative General Assembly would, you know, not go along with that in all likelihood. And then he would have ammunition for the next election cycle to say, you know, I've got to have Democrats in the General Assembly. I can't get anything done. These mean old Republicans don't want to give teacher raises, you know, and stuff like that. So I appreciate that you feel like there is at least the possibility that he will use his budget for political purposes, because I'm convinced of that myself.
Well, first, I do want to say that we will treat Governor Cooper with the same respect and courtesy that we gave to Governor McCrory, which is to say, not a lot, because the General Assembly is going to set the budget for the state. Governor McCrory had some requests. Some of them he got, and some of them he didn't. And Governor Cooper will be able to work with the General Assembly on some things, and on some things he won't. The biggest problem that I see in these debates on teacher pay raises, on the education funding, is that these are all arguments about the economic interests of adults. And we should be concentrating on the educational needs of our students.
Wow.
NPR did a story on teacher pay. Teacher pay was the secondary discussion. They were talking about affordable housing. And I was surprised to learn a third-year teacher in San Jose, California, makes $100,000 a year. She has a 2.5-hour daily commute because a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom house in San Jose rents for $7,500 a month.
Wow.
That would be 90% of her gross salary. She can't live in San Jose. Teacher pay on average for the U.S., it fluctuates based on things like cost of living. It costs a lot to live in New York City. Teachers have to make a lot to live there. Teachers don't have to make as much to live a better life in Mecklenburg County, or especially in most of North Carolina. So to just talk about national averages distorts the debate. It's kind of like the statistician who drowned in a river with an average depth of 4 inches. The average doesn't matter. What is the quality of life? And I believe our teachers should have a salary and a benefits package that allows them to live a life of dignity, and that our best teachers should be very well paid indeed because of the value they add. The arguments that we have that center on teacher pay ignore the fact the purpose of schools, the purpose of education, is to educate our kids where they can graduate high school and enter the workforce or continue their education as they choose to enable them to live a life of dignity and success, however they define it. If we've got kids that are coming out of high school that are not really at high school graduate level, that have dropped out, they are doomed to a life poverty and dependence.
Yes.
And they are not the workforce we need to build our 21st century economy. We need to concentrate on educating our kids, on finding ways to educate kids that have challenges. You know, I hear frequently, teachers will say, well, we don't have parental involvement. I understand that. But you're arguing with the weather. There is absolutely nothing I can do in the General Assembly to make a parent that is uneducated themselves suddenly become educated so they can read to their children and help them with their math.
Yeah.
We have got to find ways to teach the kids that don't have the parental support, because we're going to have them either as educated or adult, as educated adults or uneducated adults. That's the only choice that we have. Really, these people are going to be here regardless, so we need to find a way to educate them to make them self-sufficient.
Well, Representative Brawley, what you've done here is, I told you we would take about 15 to 20 minutes, and you have taken me to the place where I realized I could talk with you for 2 hours and sit riveted at every word. And unfortunately, out of respect for your time, I know that we need to wrap this up, but I will ask you to come on again soon, because you're absolutely fabulous guest. But number two, Let me ask you this.
Sure.
In terms of the, you said things are getting contentious down there. I see that Governor Cooper was very, a lot of acrimony even before he began to take office, and then immediately following that, and then the session has convened, and it really doesn't appear to me that the folks on the left are going to be satisfied with anything that you guys do at all. And I wonder if in reality these people don't understand or don't aren't grateful for the fact that the state's economy is doing so well. They're not grateful for teacher pay raises. They're not grateful for, you know, paying off the enormous debt to unemployment. They're not grateful for fixing Medicaid. I just feel like, you know, it's very difficult for the truth to find its way to people, you know, across the state. Does that frustrate you?
Yes. We've been in office for 6 years. I went to a forum hosted by the Charlotte Observer where people were screaming about all of the tax cuts. As it turned out, I had brought a chart with me that showed the actual budget numbers. The comparisons are usually made to 2008, which was the highest funding under the previous Democratic legislature. They had cut funding in 2009 and 2010. We had raised funding every year, and I held up the chart and showed it. I held up a chart. It wasn't as easy to see, but it showed the average income in each county in North Carolina, and it showed the average teacher pay as a line across it. And in 97 counties, the average teacher pay was higher than the average income in those counties. We're told that I'm frequently told that I've slashed education money, and we haven't. We've increased it.
That's right.
We could have an argument over did we increase it enough. That's a debate I would love to have. We can have arguments over are we spending it in the right way. If the argument is whether or not we have increased educational funding, that's an argument over differing realities.
Right.
Jim Martin has said everybody has his own opinion, but no one's entitled to their own facts.
Yeah.
So if we start with a common set of facts and then we argue in the marketplace of ideas, the way the founding fathers intended, I think we end up in a better place.
Yeah.
This is, I think, more about winning elections than about policy.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely absolutely right about that.
Mm-hmm.
So
having said that, there are a lot of folks that I find that we can work with. And it's interesting. You will see a lot of times there will be bills that will have over 100 votes. And what we've done is we've had people that are working across the aisle and have found ways to do exactly what we need to get done. And I'm glad when that happens. We need more of it. And if we were able to get a lot more of it done, I think the state would be better off. When we are working together, we negotiate. Now, maybe I don't get 100% of what I want, but I get 70% of what I want. Then the other people get 30% of what they want. Everybody has got an interest in the outcome.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's when you try to get 100% and the other guys get nothing, that's when you get bomb throwers. And I think there are a lot of places where we could build a broader consensus. And I'm hopeful that men and women of goodwill on both sides will finally say, okay, we can fight this up to a point, but we have serious problems here. And they need serious solutions brought together by serious people dealing with each other in good faith. And
yeah.
The more we can do that, the better off this state that we all love will be.
Absolutely. Well, Representative Brawley, thank you. I went over the time I promised, and I apologize for that. But I would hope that you will come on the show again in the near future, because you are Like I said, I'm just sitting here riveted to what you have to say. You are very much able to articulate in a way that our listeners will be able to understand, well, the fact versus fiction over what's been going on at the General Assembly. Thank you very much, sir, for being our guest on What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the opportunity, and you're also welcome for my appearance, and yes, I will come again.
Great. Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, I told you, he is a good guest, and I am going to work diligently. We are going to work diligently here at What Matters in North Carolina at getting him back on very soon, because he's very conversational, and yet, even though he's involved, you know, right there in the trenches with all of the appropriations and budgeting stuff, and he could get real technical, he explains stuff that, well, even folks like me can understand it. And so I appreciate Representative William Brawley being our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina. And as always, we appreciate you listening to the podcast. Do this, won't you? Bookmark freedomactionnetwork.com, or go ahead and head over to the iTunes or Google Play stores and subscribe to the podcast. Have it dropped into your phone or your computer every single day. You don't want to miss a minute. As the General Assembly is in session, we are, as I like to say, widening the net. We are having more and more members of the General Assembly on the program and becoming friends of the show. Last week, if you missed it, we had Representative Bradford on, Representative Stone. You can go to freedomactionnetwork.com and listen to those at your leisure. And it's able to, when we're having these folks on, we're able to stay right up to date, right up to the minute with legislation that they have proposed and things that are unfolding, you know, within the same week in some instances. Representative Dollar last week, his bill that we talked about last week will be heard on the House floor. It had already gone through House appropriations the day after we talked to him. And that's the bill, of course, that would require money be put in the state's rainy day fund. So I don't think you can get any more up-to-the-minute coverage of what's going on in state government than you can right here at What Matters in North Carolina. Tell a friend, tell a family member, send them a link to the show, encourage them to go to iTunes or Google Play, and let's just keep growing the audience so that what we talked about at the very beginning, the truth, will have a way to be a part of people's lives, and they can hear what's actually going on in the General Assembly as opposed to what they may read in their morning paper. Thanks so much for listening. We've got great shows planned for you all week long. And until next time, I'm Mark Shiver. Thank you so much for listening to What Matters in North Carolina.